One of the greatest of all bel canto singers, Dame Joan Sutherland, referred to the heroine of Bellini's Norma as the pinnacle role. And she was right. There's no greater music for a soprano in the entire operatic repertoire. No role demands more in technique, expressiveness, and stage presence. If you succeed on stage as the Druid High Priestess Norma, you have indeed reached the pinnacle. Hello, I'm Roger Pines, dramaturg at Lyric Opera of Chicago, and it's my pleasure to bring you this commentary on Norma. You'll hear excerpts from a performance on the EMI Classics label with a legendary Norma of the 1950s and early 1960s, Maria Callas. Franco Corelli is Pollione, Krista Ludwig is Adalgisa, and Nicola Zaccaria is Oroveso. The venerable Tullio Serafin, a hugely important mentor in Maria Callas' career, conducts these soloists with the chorus and orchestra of Milan's Teatro alla Scala. Vincenzo Bellini was the pride of Catania, Sicily, where he was born in 1801. He came from a musical family, showed great talent very early, and in his mid-teens was already composing prolifically. Through his city's generosity, he was given money to support his studies in Naples. Once he relocated to Milan, he proved to be a good promoter of his own talents, and he knew how to make friends in the right places. He eventually met Felice Romani, the most successful librettist of the time, who would write the texts of 7 Bellini operas, including Norma. Like this opera, those by Bellini that preceded it centered on a memorable heroine, whether the sad noblewomen Imogene in Il Pirata and Alaide in La Straniera, Giulietta in Love with Romeo in I Capuletti e Montecchi, or the sleepwalker Amina in La Sonnambula. In Norma, Bellini and Romani created a stronger woman than any of these, a woman of stature, a leader, someone possessing true gravitas to whom all must listen. By this time, any new opera of Bellini was a major event in Italian musical life. The commission came from La Scala and coincided with Milan's 1831 carnival season. It was Romani who brought the subject matter to Bellini's attention. The source was a play, Norma ou l'infanticide, Norma or the infanticide, by a major Paris-based playwright and poet of the time, Alexandre Soumet. The play had premiered in April 1831, and the opera premiered the day after Christmas the same year. That gives us an idea of how quickly composers worked back then. The opening night of Norma was unsuccessful, and it's hard today to figure out why. Bellini thought it might have been due to the machinations of a faction supported by money from the rich mistress of a rival composer. But Norma was triumphant thereafter, with nearly 40 performances in that first season in Milan. It also made it to America within 10 years. Beginning with the prima donna who created the title role, Giuditta Pasta, Norma very quickly became the piece against which great sopranos measured themselves. It was also the Bellini opera that other composers most admired. One was Richard Wagner, who really worshipped Bellini. 6 years after the premiere, he conducted the opera himself. He wrote that of all Bellini's creations, it's Norma that unites the richest flow of melody with the deepest glow of truth. We're in ancient times, in Gaul, which is occupied by the Romans, much to the outrage of the Druids. In their sacred forest, we learn from Oroveso that his daughter, the high priestess Norma, will soon be appearing for the sacred rite of the cutting of the mistletoe. He and the Druids pray that their god Irminsul will incite in them a hate and fury against Rome. What the Druids don't know is that Norma has broken her vows. She's in love with their enemy, the Roman proconsul Pollione, and has given birth to his 2 children in secret. Pollione now appears stealthily. He's there to find the girl he's now in love with, the young priestess Adalgisa. He tells his centurion, Flavio, about a dream he had. He was with Adalgisa in Rome at the altar of Venus. He sings this very confidently and buoyantly. Then, in the dream, suddenly Adalgisa was surrounded by an awful shadow that tore her from Pollione. And from afar, he heard his children crying, and then an awful voice saying, "This is Norma's vengeance on her faithless lover." The druids are approaching. Pollione leaves, but not before proclaiming that he'll destroy the altars of the god who would take Adalgisa away from him. The druids now appear, with Norma finally making her entrance. Oroveso asks her how much longer must they remain oppressed by Rome. Norma cautions everyone, prophesying that Rome will fall one day, but not at the druids' hands. She counsels peace and proceeds to cut the mistletoe, offering a prayer to the goddess of the moon. This is Casta Diva. It's a cavatina, an aria emphasizing a purely flowing legato line and the ultimate in graceful phrasing. The words are beautiful, too. Just think of the first verse. Casta diva che in argenti queste sacre antiche piante a noi volgi il bel sembiante senza nube e senza vel. Chaste goddess who bathes in silver light these ancient hallowed trees, turn your fair face on us, unclouded and unveiled. One of 19th century France's greatest poets, Théophile Gautier, wrote about the melody of Casta Diva, "With every note, it seems that one can hear the evening breeze sighing in the moist, rosy leaves. There's a freshness, a velvet, or silver, or blue, if an idea of color can apply to a sound. There's a charm and an effect that are irresistible." Now Norma proclaims that when the Druid's god demands the blood of Rome, her own voice will thunder forth from the temple. The Druid's cry, "The Roman proconsul will be the first to fall." Norma knows she can punish Pollione, but her heart hasn't the strength to do it. In an aside, she hopes that the warmth of her love will bring him back to her. This is her Cabaletta, a wonderful convention of bel canto opera. It's a second aria, but livelier in tempo and fancier vocally than the cavatina, giving a chance for the singer to really show her prowess in moving her voice through florid music. The Druids leave the forest, but Adalgisa remains behind to pray. She's terrified, having broken her vows by falling in love. Suddenly, Pollione is there. He proclaims that he'll never leave her. "You were promised to your god, but your heart you gave to me." He's leaving for Rome at dawn, and after much persuasion, Adalgisa agrees to go with him so they can begin a new life together. The final section of their duet gives us his persuasiveness and her growing confidence. We move to Norma's home. She's tortured by the sight of her two children, since they're the fruit of her guilty passion for Pollione. She calms herself down when Adalgisa appears. She confesses that she's in love. In one of Bellini's most ravishing, most heartfelt melodies, Adalgisa describes to Norma how she would wait for her lover secretly at the temple. Whether the role is sung by a soprano, the voice for which it was written, or by a high mezzo-soprano, as on this recording, this moment is the supreme test for Adalgisa. How flowing, how expressive, how touching can she make these phrases? The whole time that Adalgisa is singing, Norma is remembering how Pollione's first words of love opened her heart. Adalgisa is ecstatic when Norma releases her from her vows. But then, when Norma asks who the girl's lover is and hears her respond, "He's not from Gaul, he's from Rome," that creates a sudden shock in Norma. Then, when Pollione conveniently appears, she explodes. "Don't tremble, faithless man. She's not to blame. You're the guilty one. Tremble for your children." This is a different sort of test from Casta Diva. That was about the flow of beautiful legato. This is about thrust, aggressiveness, accuracy, confidence on high C. But any singer of this role also has to be careful not to let the emotions get out of control in such a treacherous passage. Per te! Norma turns to Adalgisa, and in calmer but still aggressive phrases, she again becomes the authoritative priestess. You are the victim of a cruel deception. He betrayed your heart as well. This launches an extended trio that closes Act One. Hide our shame from this troubled girl, Pollione says to Norma, while Adalgisa feels miserable at the thought that Pollione could have so totally deceived her. Here are the three of them together. Now Norma dismisses Pollione. He curses the day fate brought him together with her, while Adalgisa hopes to bring him back to his children. Listen for the pain in the voice that Maria Callas's Norma brings to the words, Figli oblia, promesse onore. Forget your children, your promises, your honor. This is the trio equivalent of a cabaletta, the fast, aggressive, large-scale finale of the scene. The first of Act II's three scenes takes us back to Norma's home. The children are asleep. She approaches them, dagger in hand. The thought that they could live in Rome as the slaves of a stepmother appalls her. But she's terrified at the thought of killing them, knowing that they were once her joy, that their only crime is to be Pollione's children. The melody she sings here is classic Bellini, sculpted with long drawn-out lines that take stupendous breath control and eloquence to sustain. But for me, the children have already died, says Norma. Let them die for him, too. She lifts the dagger to kill the children, but she can't bring herself to do it. She orders her servant, Clotilde, to fetch Adalgisa, who's been weeping and praying nearby. When Adalgisa appears, Norma asks her to take the children to Pollione. Adalgisa refuses. Let pity for these children move you, she says, if you feel no pity for yourself. Norma wonders why Adalgisa is trying to weaken her with those sweet feelings, with false hopes. This is the first half of their famous duet, beginning Mira o Norma. In any performance of this opera, we wait to hear how the two voices are going to relate. Will they blend? Will each respond to the other in the subtlest, most sensitive way? When they ascend in thirds, will they work as one voice? Adalgisa says she'll go to Pollione and insist that he return to Norma. She gratefully embraces Adalgisa, and they sing the second Cabaletta-like portion of their duet, in which they declare that they'll remain friends forever. Here again, it's a matter of the two singers creating an incredible bond between them, a bond of two musicians and interpreters that connect in an intense and very specific way. The next scene takes us back to the Sacred Forest. The Druids are with Oroveso, who brings them news that the Romans are remaining in Gaul, and that a newer, even crueler commander will succeed Pollione. Now it's Oroveso who is advocating peace. We should keep our hatred hidden until the Romans think it's dead, but the day will come when it will burst forth. This is one of the few opportunities the bass in this cast has to show his grandeur of voice, the essential grandeur of his delivery, as befits the music. The final scene takes us to the temple of Irminsul. Norma is alone, longing for Pollione to return to her. Clotilde arrives with bad news. Adalgisa went to Pollione. He refused to return to Norma. Now he's threatening to abduct Adalgisa. Norma is enraged. She strikes the gong that summons the Druids, and when they appear, she declares war, plunder, and death on the Druids. Guerra, strage, sterminio. This is probably the most barnstorming moment in any Bellini opera. It anticipates the grander scale choral episodes in the early operas of the master composer whose first opera would premiere just 4 years after Bellini's death, Giuseppe Verdi. A Roman caught lurking in the temple is brought before the Druids for punishment. Of course, it's Pollione. Norma is about to strike him dead with her dagger, but then she hesitates. I need to question him to know who his accomplice is. Once she's alone with him, she has a little moment of triumph. At last you're in my hands. Only I can break your chains. In terms of the singing, it's a tough moment for Norma, lying very low in the voice. It needs a forcefulness that's difficult to achieve. This was something Maria Callas could always produce in her singing. Norma will save Pollione if he gives up Adalgisa, but he refuses. Norma responds, then as a priestess who has betrayed her vows, she'll die in flames. It's amazing here that Bellini has found a way to add a special tension with both his orchestration and the way he uses Norma's trills within the musical line. The Druids return. Norma announces that a priestess has betrayed her vows and must die. Then she gives them a massive shock. It is I. She turns calmly to Poyone and begins a beautiful, quiet ensemble with the words, "What a heart you betrayed. See the heart you lost." Now Poyone is totally remorseful. He finally understands the extraordinary human being that Norma is. This is a stately number, colored by a dignified power that sets this opera apart. Norma turns to her father and reveals to him that she is a mother. She begs him to protect her children. He rejects her until she kneels before him and begs him, "Don't let them be victims of my cruel mistake. Don't let them be destroyed in their innocence. Remember that I am your blood. Have pity on my children." Oroveso finally yields, and Norma walks into the funeral pyre, with Poglione now joining her. The way this concluding ensemble builds so gradually is truly magnificent. Don't forget, at this point, Norma has been singing for hours, and yet in these final moments, the voice has to be at its broadest, grandest, and fullest, while pouring maximum expressiveness into each phrase. The peak of bel canto opera, Bellini's glorious Norma. The excerpts from Norma were furnished courtesy of Warner Music Group, the official education and promotional music provider of Lyric Opera of Chicago. Thank you for listening.